Welcome to the Blast Zone, the podcast where we dig up the bodies that haunt Hollywood and try to find out why they went to their graves. This week, when a movie tells you it sucks on so many levels, maybe you should believe them. This is Jason X.
Helcome, helcome, helcome to the Blast Zone.
Helcome to the Blast Zone.
We are not a podcast about bad movies. We are a podcast about movies that did badly.
That's right.
I am John Drake, in-house film critic of my letterboxed account.
And I'm Ian Dukes. I'm a demon with horns and bat wings and summonings about movies.
Movies like Jason X, which we're talking about today. But before we get into that, Ian, how are you?
You know, it's week two of Blasttober, and it's week 2500, give or take, of my life. Oh. And so we're kind of in the middle of both.
Quick math.
So far, it's been really terrifying, and I'm scared to see what happens next. So that's where we are.
Yeah, the world is spooky in general.
Yeah.
We don't need October to make it more so, but we wanted to spookify things just a little bit more. So we got one of the spookiest people we know, my friend, your friend.
That's right.
By you, I mean the listeners.
All our friends.
She's host of Death and Friends, a podcast about death. You've heard her on this show before talking about cats, getting me to admit my feelings for the Taylor Swift cat, which were complicated.
Really?
It's Nash Flynn.
Hey.
Nash, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me. Interesting that you introed me and cited my previous performance on the show without mentioning that we also had a podcast.
That's right. Talk Chef. Podcast about Top Chef.
Oh, yeah. Yes. These two did a little show together.
We did do a little show together.
Pretty good. Pretty fun.
About food.
Yeah. So we're very comfortable podcasting together. So I'm here. I'm in my comfort zone right now. Ian and Nash, I'll help you guys get on the same page if you need me
Listen, it's October. I'm comfortable. This is my stasis.
This is your time.
Yeah, this is where we are.
Decked out in all black tonight. You guys can't see her, but she is in her prime.
Looking sharp.
Yeah, in my spooky studio. Yeah, with my bat wings.
With the blood red hair.
Yeah.
So Nash, how are things going for you?
Good. It's been a busy week. This is my football season, basically, for spooky shit.
Yeah. But
it's also the football season for football.
Oh, well, I don't know about that. I can't confirm or deny.
But yes, you've got 30 days to do as many spooky things as you can think of. You really got to cram it all in there.
Right.
And this is one of them. We're glad you found time in your spooky schedule for us.
I know. I watched a spooky porno yesterday for a podcast. Now I'm talking about this.
This is also kind of a spooky porno.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I actually texted you to ask you that while I was watching it.
This movie's so horny.
Yeah. Did you accidentally catfish me into a second night of porn, John?
Nash is now just a porn podcaster, but accidentally. She just keeps getting.
Yeah. I don't know how it happened.
It's a living.
Well, this leads very easily into what we usually do, which is where we talk about something we watched, not for the podcast. So Nash, why don't you fill in the listeners as far as what you're talking about?
Yeah, so I watched Pirates 2, Stagnetti's Revenge. Mm. It's a porn from 2008, I believe.
Okay.
It had an unreal budget of $8 million.
It's like a real budget.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just under half what this movie had.
Yeah. This is a real film. If your listeners haven't had a chance yet to partake, Pirates is, there's one and two. I am currently kickstarting for the third because I really think this needs to be tied up. Like, we really need to wrap this film up. But they're both very good. You can skip the porn scenes. They're not plot relevant. Honestly, they just deter from what magic is happening in these
films. I understand Pirates 2 if I haven't seen Pirates 1?
Yes. Because they go over it a couple times.
Stagnetti is not a big part. Okay.
Well, flashbacks. Stagnetti is, it's his revenge movie. I put that in quotes because I don't know that he achieved all of his goals in the afterlife. But he's not super important here. He's just a placeholder.
Does he get revenge on people by having sex with them?
No.
Okay.
Okay, don't spoil too much.
Revenge porn isn't good. We don't want that. So that's not what that means.
It's different. Yeah, it doesn't usually involve a ghost of a pirate, but
I have to say they spent an enormous amount of the $8 million budget on graphics, which I just find a delight because they were incredible in 2008. These graphics were out of control for the time that they were created. But now they're just fantastic because they're terrible, but you know they spent money on them.
Yeah, this was top of the line for porn in 2008.
Yeah.
It's probably still towards the top of the line for porn in 2021.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, how far has porn gone?
There's like a full Kraken in this film.
Oh, wow.
They had Kraken money.
They don't do anything with the tentacles.
No, do they? They don't. There's okay. absolutely no tentacle porn. I was worried about it as soon as the Kraken came out of the sea, but they really let it go. So it's, all right. it's good.
It sounds like they were trying to make a real movie with porn. Sprinkled yeah. throughout. I like that. Porn sprinkles.
I mean, I think it's honestly, they were like, what if Johnny Depp was sexy instead of Johnny Depp? And that's where the movie came from.
If you just took off like 14 of his scarves and or bracelets.
Yeah, because the main guy, the captain in this film, Captain Reynolds, is like if Zap Brannigan was a human being and also the captain of a pirate ship.
Cool. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised they didn't name him like Captain Jim Raven or something, like just yeah. one notch away from Jack Sparrow.
They didn't really want it to feel like a Johnny Depp porno, I think. Because once again, like Johnny Depp is an attractive human being, but absolutely no one would have sex with him. You know what I mean?
Not anymore.
Zero yeah. people.
Yeah. yeah. The shine has come off that particular. What does the shine come off of?
I don't know. Apples?
All of it.
All right. Ian, what about you? Did you watch a porn or a different type of movie?
I didn't watch a porn. Regrettably, I watched something a little more serious. Kind of ties into this week's movie because we've got sci-fi that's really dumb and then sci-fi that might be too smart for its own good. I watched the debut of Foundation on Apple TV. This classic.
It's a big one.
Yeah. It's like a big project. It's an old Isaac Asimov book. So it's got a lot of history. It's kind of good. It's got some good people. Got Jared Harris, who people know from Chernobyl and The Crown, but of course we know him best as an annoying stoner bro in Lady in the Water. So it looks good. It's this heady kind of sci-fi. It's got this deep political bent about an empire dealing with threats to its power. So it's really kind of intellectual, but it looks great. Tons of exposition, tons of world building in this first episode. But like if you're into sci-fi, it works. Because it's smart and it looks good. So we'll see where it goes from here. You got to be in a different mode, though. Like it's
not Jason X sci-fi.
It's like doing your sci-fi homework.
Okay. That's kind of how I felt about The Expanse at first, but it got worth it as it went yeah. on. I checked. So today is, we're recording this on the release day. We're recording this on October 1st, which is the day that The Many Saints of Newark came out. And much to my surprise, this is not a religious film. It's got nothing to do with the church. It's about young Sopranos. It's baby Sopranos.
Oh, that sounds cute.
Yeah. So it was inessential. There's no need for this movie to exist except
oh, really?
To cash in on nostalgia and tell a decent mob story where the Sopranos ties are just like, they all look, that's a little version of Silvio. Like, we know that guy, but he's little. And that's kind of the end of it. So it's fine. It's enjoyable. If you like a mob story, you'll enjoy it. There's nothing wrong with it, so to speak. But yeah, inessential is how I would describe it.
Got it.
So Jason X, I need to ask you guys, what was your awareness of, first of all, the Friday the 13th franchise as a whole and this movie in particular? Nash, hit me with it.
I'm actually not a big slasher person, so very little, actually. I did know, like, obviously Jason walks around with the hockey mask. I assumed he was Canadian and just yep. like really mad about maple season, but that's
former
far.
Mountie. Okay, so you were not a no. fan, and you did you remember when this movie came out, like seeing trailers for it or anything?
Probably vaguely, but nothing specific on this one.
Okay. Ian, what about you?
Well, I never saw it. I never intended to see it because I'm not that kind of horror movie fan. That being said, I'm quite familiar with it conceptually and the imagery from it because I'm pretty sure that I worked on the website for this movie. Oh. I did a lot of movie websites back in the day. And
Ian kept this for me in the pre-recording, by the way. I had no idea yeah. he had an insider knowledge about the website for.
Yeah, I was doing a lot of New Line websites back then because the friends that I worked with and for had a close relationship with New Line. This came out just after the first Lord of the Rings movie, mm-hmm. and I did a lot on that. I think maybe that's why I wasn't like the main guy working on this site, but I remember the photos coming through and helping out with some little piece of it. So I could totally picture his chromed out mask.
Literally every week we find out more interesting tidbits about Ian's life.
Yeah.
I try to come with something.
It keeps me going, man.
Keep it interesting.
The most interesting man in the world.
But can you imagine being New Line and being like, we're going to follow up Lord of the Rings with Jason X.
Yeah. Hit after hit. No. Keep them coming.
I feel like Lord of the Rings was the outlier for them if you look back at their catalog.
Yeah, I had to actually check myself. I'm like, wait a minute, New Line and Lord of the Rings, did that really happen? Yeah, they lucked out.
Oh, yeah. I remember being like, I want to work for New Line because they made the Lord of the Rings movies.
Yeah.
And then I looked at like the rest of their movies. I was like, never mind. But yeah, I was never, Friday the 13th was not my favorite horror franchise. I definitely have seen some of them, but not all of them, and certainly not like in order. I'll watch one if it's on or people want to watch it. Or like, I saw one at a drive-in that We Hate Movies hosted a few months ago
cool.
during the pandemic. Ooh. That was really cool. It's a great podcast. We enjoy. Sure. But yeah, I'm not a fan of the series. And I remember I did watch this on DVD. I did not see this in theater. I watched it with friends on DVD because it's a fun watch it with a group of friends and like get a little fucked up and make fun of it type of movie. It's got that vibe going for
That's the right speed.
And I think the movie knows that to its credit.
It does know that. I mean, the franchise knows that, right? I mean, what else is it for but teens to just get rowdy and celebrate sex and death?
I'd say maybe the first three had some higher aspirations, but they quickly abandoned
them. Yeah, they were still in the formative years of the genre when there wasn't the same type of franchises. This is one of the originals.
I think that making fun of this movie is a little punching down. You know what I mean? Like, I was like laughing at it, but I was like, man, I feel bad.
I see. I have a different take on it. I feel like almost everybody involved, not everyone, but almost everybody knew what they were doing when they made this movie and had fun with it. But if that's not the case, then yes, I feel very bad for them all.
I mean, there was a certain like disconnect that I felt. Where, okay, so I just coming off of a porn watch, obviously, and I feel like when you watch porn, you're wondering, like, the actors that are good at delivering lines, did you go in it for porn or did you go in it to act? And this had the same sort of cognitive dissonance where you were like, why are you here? Like, I had to wonder about why someone would say yes to this project.
Well, this is almost a porn, so the question still holds.
I know. Is it the same people?
It could be.
Did you get into show business to die on screen, or did you actually want to act out of a role?
Is this a snuff porn, I guess?
It kind of is, yeah. Oh, God. Makes it a darker proposition when you look at it from that lens.
The whole business is, yeah, we're going to have to get into this thing, because when you talk about horror movies, and especially franchises like this, the discussion is about what are the cool kills in the movie? And then you're like, of course, yeah, you got to talk about which is the coolest kill. And then you stop and you think, I'm talking about the coolness of people dying.
All right, but there's a literally very cool kill in this movie.
There are. I'm going to participate in this discussion as much as I also find it morally objectionable.
Did you get the wordplay, though? Because it's literally cool.
Oh, it's cold. It's ice cold, baby.
There were at least two of them.
Cooler than cool.
Oh, I'm excited to talk about this movie now. So can I do my little thing so we could get into the story of the movie? Because I'm hyped up now. This movie's ridiculous.
Let's hear how this thing happened.
All right. So in the year 2000, the Friday the 13th / Jason Voorhees franchise was in a bad spot. There had not been a new movie since 1993's Jason Goes to Hell, The Final Friday, and as that movie ended with a cliffhanger teasing a showdown between Jason and Freddy Krueger, fans were clamoring to see them battle it out. But rights issues and studio disputes kept that project in development hell, and rights holders to the Jason character were getting concerned moviegoers would lose interest without some new content. So Jason X was essentially a stopgap.
Yeah, throw the fans a bone. A bloody dismembered bone.
Mostly set 400 years in the future, so it couldn't cause too many continuity problems for the eventual Freddy vs. Jason movie. The movie was helmed by special effects whiz and frequent David Cronenberg collaborator Jim Isaac. Given a budget of $14 million, which is almost three times the previous highest budget in the series, the movie blended the typical horror and slasher elements familiar to the series with science fiction and absurdist comedy, intentional or otherwise. Also, everybody is super horny in this movie, so sprinkle in a little porn.
I'll take potpourri for $14 million, Alex.
Filmed between March and May of 2000, the movie went through several delays before finally locking in a U.S. release date of April 26, 2002. It had been a long time, maybe forever, since the Friday the 13th movies had produced a critical darling, and Jason X was no different, being savaged by critics upon release.
They put an arrow through its neck like it was Kevin Bacon.
While the movie didn't perform any worse than other recent entries in the series, the inflated budget ensured it would be a loser for the studio, only earning $17.1 million theatrically. The movie has remained a favorite of certain viewers, though, as its inventive kills and self-referential humor make it a fun time for longtime series fans. So that
so fun
is the story of Jason X.
Fun kills.
Ian is taking moral objection.
Fun kills is what I look for in my entertainment.
When you're watching the Friday the 13th series, it kind of is, because what else is there to do with it?
No, except I'm being facetious, because actually I'm going to complain that the kills weren't fun enough. They weren't brutal enough for me. They weren't bloody enough. So just listen to me contradict myself.
That's something I've noticed watching the old Friday the 13th movies, is that he kills a lot of people, but there's a lot of relatively bloodless kills in them and not super interesting stuff.
Yeah, knock someone's head up against a wall and it's like, okay, I guess that killed them, but wasn't particularly exciting.
There's two kills from this movie that stand out to me as interesting and fun, and then one that involves virtual reality, so I don't know if that counts.
Yes.
But yeah, overall, I'd say the Friday the 13th series doesn't have the inventiveness with the kills that Nightmare on Elm Street has.
Yeah, we're just dropping bodies.
Yeah, he's all about the body count and maybe not having as much fun with it in the process.
Yeah, Jason, you're not having the fun.
Jason needs to lighten up and take some more pride in his work.
Well, he never got a good education. I mean, he was drowned in a lake when he was 6 or something. How old was he?
Right. He was a young boy, yeah.
Freddie probably has some kind of college degree, maybe a community college, and then he couldn't get work, so he went to work as a janitor in the high school.
Probably couldn't get work because he was creeping everybody out. He's fucking weird.
But you can be a night janitor and not interact with people. You don't have to commit to the bits. Yeah.
That's true. That sounds like a porn. Night janitor.
The night janitor.
He'll clean your pipes. I don't know. No, oh, I didn't make a tag for that. Sorry.
It's staying in. We're not cutting that. Yeah, so Ian thinks the kills aren't creative enough. I think there's an all-time good kill in this movie. But yeah, he kills a lot of people in this movie. So I guess it's hard to come up with something new and interesting for all of them. This is, I think, the highest body count he's had in a movie.
Well, I mean, he takes out a whole ship full of people, right?
That's like 20,000 people because that's not even a ship. It's like a station.
Oh, my God.
It's like taking out Grand Central Station.
Yeah, you're not living through that.
Yeah, that thing was pretty. I would have loved to see the interior with that dome. It must have been really cool in there. But we're getting ahead of ourselves.
They didn't have the money for that. Bummer. They flew like a spray painted Star Wars toy into a paper mache dome and then tried to make it look legit. So yeah, they weren't showing the inside of that.
No.
Sorry. Maybe with $40 or $50 million more, they could have pulled that off. Do you want to tell us about this movie and the storyline?
Do I ever? Of course I do.
Hit us with it.
All right. So it is the year 2455. Lecherous professor Brandon Lowe leads a group of horny teens on an anthropological field trip from Earth 2 to the ruins of Earth. They find 2 cryogenically frozen bodies and bring them back onto their spaceship, the Grendel. One corpse is the infamous killer, Jason Voorhees, and the other is Rowan LaFontaine, the scientist who froze Jason as he tried to escape her research facility back in 2010. They use nanobots to heal Rowan and bring her successfully out of stasis. She warns them of the danger of Jason, but Lowe becomes focused on the idea he can make big money from this strange cargo. As one student studies Jason's frozen body, he unexpectedly comes back to life and kills her. Then Jason grabs a shiny space machete and his space rampage has begun.
Space machete! Woo! It's like
it's shiny and pretty.
What possible use could that space machete have in an actual autopsy setting?
It was laid out with some other pretty gnarly tools on that tray. They were all shiny.
Are you doing autopsies on a fucking rhinoceros? Like, why would you need this?
Have you ever cut through bone, John?
I don't know. My wife, Jamie, works in pathology. She does autopsies.
Oh, really?
I should have asked her before I made a fool of myself on the air. She's probably going to come after me. But anyway, let's talk about this intro in the year 2010. First of all, shouts to David Cronenberg showing up for his boy, Jim Isaac, and cameoing as the worst person in the world, Dr. Wimmer.
Yeah.
Cronenberg, something would have told me he'd be above cameoing in a Friday the 13th movie, but I'm glad I was wrong.
He lowers himself right down into the role. He seems very comfortable as a sleazy business guy who overrules the scientist.
Yeah, not the best actor, but like he's having fun and we love to see him. So it's the least creepy movie he's ever had anything to do with, probably.
So this is the first scene, right, where he's telling her that he's taking the body.
And then Jason's on the meat hook and then he magically disappears.
I have a lot of questions about how the hell he got out of there. Oh, I'm sorry. Now you're a contortionist. Thanks for nothing, Jason.
With just the lightest footfalls, no one can hear him moving around.
He gets out of chains. 400 pounds. And puts another human being in chains. Like, okay. Whatever.
Yeah.
I'm suspending my belief on that one. I was watching the scene between these two scientists and I was actually like, you know what? This shitty guy, I know he's shitty because the dumb face he's making. I got the impression. But I'm actually with him on this. Like, I'm sorry. We found a human that can regenerate parts of his own body. I'm about that. Okay. I want this for humans.
He has a great point. Like we do need to study that. Do we need to truck him to Jersey City or wherever he was going? Where was he going?
Scranton. The scientific capital of the world, Scranton, Pennsylvania. We're all the cutting edge regenerative tissue.
Bring that shit to Jason. Like you do not have to put him in a truck.
Right. Build a lab on Camp Crystal Lake and just lock him in there.
Surround him.
Yeah, he has a point though, because they built a lab on this is the Camp Crystal Lake research facility. And
you're right.
It fucking sucks.
Proved his point. Yeah, it looks pretty dingy.
It's a giant warehouse. They couldn't even afford lights. And the floor is soaking wet. Like, where are the puddles everywhere? The first scene is Cronenberg in a suit, and he's splashing his wingtips through these puddles of water in this muddy concrete basement.
They didn't dig out French drains or a dry well. Yeah. They didn't do their research.
They were just building on top of a lake.
That part of the world floods, man. You got to get your French drains and your sump pumps ready. Otherwise, you're going to be dealing with this shit every fall. It's crazy.
So,
So did the lake help Jason out of chains?
Maybe that's the theory. Him
are in cahoots. Maybe the water has special properties that save him every time. Because he drowned as a child, but was alive. Maybe it's the Lady of the Lake type.
Isn't there a worm that comes from out of the lake in another chapter of this story that's actually the animating force that crawls into different people and turns them into Jason?
Oh, that's when, I think that's the final Friday. Yeah, the one directly preceding this one where Jason can infect other people because he's dead, but his evil spirit lives on.
Yeah, so there are some spirits there. I mean, he's a supernatural being. Also,
this point he is. I think part five is when he fully becomes, or part four is when he becomes supernatural.
Okay.
Part five or four? I can't remember.
Go with that.
Yeah, he gets struck by lightning in his grave and that makes him come alive.
Oh, I hope that happens to me.
Up until then, he's just a big, strong guy. You hope it happens to you?
Yeah. How cool would that
be?
You think you lose
all humanity, though.
Well, you're done with life. You're like, I'm done. Put me in a hole. And then all of a sudden, pow, I'm back, bitches. Look out.
So let's talk about Jason and Rowan LaFontaine. Great name, by the way. Great fake name. I love it.
Porn name.
So he stabs her through this cryogenic chamber, but then the chamber still works. There's a big hole in it now.
The science. We mustn't question the science. This movie was thoroughly researched.
Yeah, I feel like if we start bringing up every scientific implausibility in this movie, this episode's going to be 4 hours long.
But it is impressive. He stabs a machete through a 6-inch thick steel door.
Where is my man getting his machetes from? Fucking Hattori Hanzo? Like, why are these machetes so strong?
Yeah.
Also, we find out that hockey is going to be banned in 2024. That's only 3 years from now.
Thank God. Thank God.
What are you talking about, Nash?
Wait, hockey or field hockey?
Yeah, I'm sure they meant field hockey.
Do they wear goalie masks in field hockey?
I mean, I'm down with a ban on both, but...
No, the Rangers need to win another Stanley Cup. They only got 3 years to do it. I don't know. I'm not optimistic, but that's sad to see. I assume that the director is a time traveler and that's definitely going to happen now. I'm taking everything this movie says about the future as gospel.
I mean, okay, fine. Hockey gets banned, but you're really going to talk about like 2024 hockey gets banned and you're not going to mention COVID? I don't believe this.
Maybe that's why they fled Earth, because COVID just never went away. So we got to get out of here.
They were like, listen, we tried banning hockey. It did not get rid of COVID. That's everything. That's all we have left in our arsenal. Time to go to space.
The only idea we had.
Yeah, I kind of got to give some credit to the sci-fi premise. Like, I'm a sucker for we ruined the Earth premises because it feels real to me. So it's actually kind of cool. I mean, horny students on a field trip isn't the way I would have done the sci-fi, but coming back to a ruined Earth and scavenging some shit out of it is kind of fun. And it looked cool. Like, even though their outfits were dorky, the scene where they're walking through the ravaged Earth back to their shuttle was kind of, there was like a little bit of cool sci-fi action in there.
So I have a lot of questions about the field trip permission forms that these kids would have had to sign to go to a ruined planet.
It's like going to a museum or like the Pioneer Village, showing you how things used to be.
Can you imagine the liability that teacher had to take on to be like, hey, listen, I'm going to take four kids with me to old Earth. We're definitely not looking for a murdered serial killer in a cryo tank. But if we find one,
we're bringing him home.
We're bringing him home.
And we're packing plenty of nipple clamps and space machetes.
Just in case.
I have to admire that Jason is such a killing machine that even as he is fully frozen, he still manages to chop somebody's fucking arm right off. Because as he just falls forward with his machete in his hand, he slices this dude's arm clean off. I'm not learning their names. There's no need.
That was Azrael, but you should not know that, and neither should I.
This dude suffices. So yeah, props to Jason, man. He's about his business at all times, even if he's not conscious.
Yeah, that was a boss move for a frozen dude.
But okay, he shoved that machete through a cryo door and then got it out and then died with his arm above him.
Posing with it, yeah. If I'm going to freeze, I better strike a nice pose.
It's like every time you go to the museum where they have the taxidermy bears, they're always in like, they're like, rawr, pose.
And that's because bears do that when you kill them at the last minute. Right. They try to scare you.
Just like Jason when he was like, I'm frozen. Jason. I better threaten the cold. So
he's like, I can tell I'm going to be part of a bad field trip in 400 years. So I better look the part. God.
I'm like, but they're on a field trip. But are they in medical school? Because everyone's doing science in halter tops, but they're still doing science.
They're pretty sciencey. Yeah, they were set up to do autopsies. And so they have two labs at least on the ship.
I want to talk to the costume person of this movie. I really do. I just want to talk. I just want you to call me. I want you to defend some choices you've made. Because, okay, space is freezing, right? super cold. Okay. Sure. Why are we doing medical science in an autopsy lab in space in a sweater that ends at your belly button that doesn't have shoulders?
That's why everybody's always banging for the body heat. So they're all just...
Our clothes don't fit us in the
future.
They
don't need clothes.
No one has a top that covers all of their skin in this entire film.
Science is sexy 400 years in the future, Nash. I don't know what to tell you. That's just how it is.
Is there a fabric shortage?
Yeah, they just had little pieces, but they're like a chunky cable knit. So they've got some warmth. The piece of the fabric that they do have is cozy. It just doesn't cover
some
much.
People keep all their body heat in their belly button area.
Yeah.
Their midriff, if you will. So I mean, like, if sweater goes all the way down, I'll be too warm. So I'm just going to crop it.
Why did we get rid of scrubs as a human population? We were like, let's no longer have medical clothing in space. You can wear whatever you want. It preferably shouldn't cover some interesting bits about you. Or like you were wearing it as a child and you just grew up in it and now it's just very revealing.
Maybe that's what it is. You get a certain amount of clothes when you're a child.
Oh, they're rationing it.
Yeah.
Because there's the girl with the sort of corset shirt that doesn't get close at all.
Oh, yeah. So, like, she can't bring it together in the middle.
That's a science corset. Please call it by its correct name.
You've got to decide whether your shortage is horizontal or vertical. But either way, you're going to be missing some
you're coverage. It's not going to fit you. Listen, anyway, I want to know who the costume designer was. And I want them to call me. That's it. That's all I want.
Okay. Well, you're complaining about Adrian, and I feel like we should cut her some slack because immediately after starting this autopsy, her head gets dunked in liquid nitrogen and then smashed into a wall until her face shatters into 1,000 pieces. Yeah. Pretty cool kill.
Cool kill.
Pretty cool.
Cool kill, gotta say.
And the effects aren't bad. Right? The effects aren't great, but I feel like they're relatively convincing, especially for this budget and this year.
It was convincing. Her face is right in your face. It ices over and then it smashes on the counter and it kind of hollows out like a gourd.
I know this is a fan favorite, Jason Kill. So,
and I mean, it's his first kill in space, right? So it has to be this moment where you're just like, oh man, that girl done died. I mean, it was cool. I didn't expect to see watching her face freeze, but I was like, oh shit, this isn't a porn after all. And then he just,
it's
like,
still kind of a porn, but it's a porn with gruesome deaths as well.
Well, because we've already seen the nipple scene at this point, which we didn't talk about for some reason.
Oh, yeah, we're jumping around with the nipple scene.
You mean the professor's nipple?
Let's talk about
it. There's a robot nipple, and there's a professor's nipples. Well,
isn't there a lack of robot nipples?
Well, they're like some painted quarters that he stuck on, and they didn't stay.
Hate when that happens.
Hate when I'm trying to fake nipples and they won't stick.
I mean, we'll get more into the android and the perfect. Who? No, who's building? Is it Azrael that's building? No, not it. No,
it's other dude.
Sunaran, I think. I don't know how you say it because I did not listen.
Sunaran. Yeah. That's a stupid name.
It's like, weird. Everybody got weird names. Mix, match, grab bag of names in this movie.
Yeah, because they're trying to do like a Beowulf motif with the Grendel. And then Tymat is another one of the ships. Like, they're trying to go mythological on us.
It's
You're thinking too hard about this shit, man. Just call everyone like Bill and Steve. Nobody gives a fuck about the mythological references you're shoehorning into the 10th movie of the Friday the 13th franchise.
Nobody cares, man. It's just robot girl and her humanoid boyfriend. We're done giving you names.
Yeah, no, we shouldn't work too hard. The first watch of this movie, I felt like they didn't even have names. People were just saying whatever word came out of their mouths when they wanted to refer to another character.
Did they even refer to each other?
Not often. Yeah, you get like one or two. I usually watch every movie we covered twice. I'm going to be honest. I gave this one a solid try. One time, I was like, I got it. I know what I need to know about this movie.
Yeah,
so, Ian, I did like your note here about right after that murder, kind of what caps off the first act of the movie.
Yeah, I was feeling Jason because he kills her. He grabs a space machete. He goes out into the hall. He sees that he's on a spaceship, kind of strolls up the hall a little bit, looks to the left, looks to the right. And then he just takes a big, deep breath and you see his shoulders go up and they kind of drop and he just shambles off. It's like, okay, I guess we're doing this.
I'm on a spaceship. Time to stab some people.
Yeah, he's as weary as we are. We are 30 minutes in and it's just starting. Yeah.
He was like, it's work for him. It's like his 9 to 5. Yeah. He's just clocking in. He had to deal with shit in the fucking parking lot this morning. You know what I mean?
Making the donuts.
Which is a metaphor for murdering the woman, which is not a good metaphor, I guess. But when that's your job, that's your job.
He made a donut out of her head.
Yeah.
He did.
Yeah, he did.
My Jason takes the morning train. All right, should I walk us through act two of this movie?
Oh, something else happened? Yeah, let's hear what that was.
There's more. There's lots more. So Jason is loose on the spaceship and he starts killing students. Professor Lowe tells Sergeant Brodsky?
Brodsky, yeah.
Professor Lowe tells Sergeant Brodsky to take his grunts and capture Jason alive, but Brodsky plans to kill Jason anyway. The grunts search for Jason in a dark part of the ship, and he kills them all in quick succession. The ship is getting close to docking at the space station Solaris, where troop reinforcements are waiting to help them, but Jason kills the Grendel's pilot, causing the ship to crash into Solaris, which blows up the entire station. Jason then smashes through a window into the lab and kills Lowe, scattering the few remaining teens. One student, Sunaran, has an android girlfriend named KM-14, and he upgrades her with weapons so she can face off with Jason in a big battle. With her guns, KM-14 blows Jason's head and body into pieces, and the survivors leave him for dead as they call for help and prepare to be rescued.
Wow, it ended fast.
It does feel like that's a big...
Seems like it's probably over.
Yeah, pretty logical place to end the movie, but no. So, I do like, in the synopsis, you just say, the grunts search for Jason in a dark part of the ship. Because what a good description of this section of the ship they're in. Is this like the storage room?
I went back, I did a partial rewatch before I gave up, and they do call it the cargo bay once or twice, but it's just a dark part.
It's where we keep our shit when we're fighting an undead person we brought from Earth from 400 years ago.
They keep all their black canvas that they just drape over all the furniture down there so everything blends into each other.
Where do I put these chains? I don't know. Hang them in the dark part. I don't know where else to put them.
Just put them with the cargo, which we're carrying for some reason to a field trip location.
Put them with all the sharp hooks and the sharpened
screws. Where do we do this giant corkscrew? Just put it on the floor under the walkway.
In case someone trips.
This is where the movie, really fails to live up to its promise. You're like, okay, it's getting going. Jason's loose. There's a bunch of guys after him. And they just shoot it so poorly. Like, we didn't know where they were. And there's never an establishing shot that even shows like, oh, hey, I am the soldier. I've been asked to search from here to there. They're just in the place. They don't even enter the place. They're just all there. And they're just creeping around corners and around various little pieces of set decoration. Like we said, chains and hooks. And there's no sense of, this looks like a scary place. It's just like close up over and over. It's like they're in a Halloween maze.
Right. It had a liminal space feel to it. Like it wasn't actually attached to the ship. And there were parts of it that Jason didn't even feel like a presence in the place that they were in. And I was like, these people are so tense. They're just going to kill themselves, like each other. And everyone's going to be like, oh, Jason just killed them. And Jason's going to be like, I just wandered in there and literally found bodies. Like, I don't.
That's a funny twist. Like somebody should pull that. They're so on edge that they just start shooting.
Misunderstood Jason. He's like, no, I turned a corner. I don't do that anymore. I don't kill.
The bodies just keep piling up because everyone's real tense.
The corkscrew kill is pretty cool, though. That's the other kill from this movie that I enjoyed, when the guy gets impaled on it and then kind of spins down to the bottom.
Yeah, that was funny, I guess.
See, Ian, joining in, your bloodlust is showing.
It was satisfying. I mean, this movie actually riled up my bloodlust because I wasn't getting enough. Another one of the grunts gets her throat slit and like 2 teaspoons of blood come out. Like they just
wandering
really
around with a dry ass throat.
Saving money on the blood budget because that wasn't much of a throat slashing.
Yeah, she got this big gash in her throat and she's just walking around like, help me.
She's basically talking, like lying down. There's a little gurgle and that's sort of it.
Again, I'm no doctor. I don't think that's how throat slashing works.
No.
Got to mention that Peter Menza is actually like a decent actor in other stuff. Brodsky.
Brodsky, the head grunt, the sergeant. He's only a sergeant, but he's commanding quite a troop there.
Well, they probably didn't feel like they needed to send the entire battalion out for a field trip with a bunch of scientists, but little did they know.
But yeah, Peter Menza, you would know as the recipient of Gerard Butler's sandal in the famous This Is Sparta kick scene.
Also, Dottore in the Spartacus series that was on Stars. He did good work in that.
Yeah, I knew him from Spartacus. And I spent the whole movie being like, I know you.
Yeah, he's got a good face.
Why are you in this film?
This was pre both of those by a couple of years, I think, at least. So I'm glad his career took off in the right direction.
He acted the hell out of this. He really did.
He's probably the best part of the movie. Yeah, his hamming it up because he's having fun, but he's not like embarrassing.
Yeah.
Like some of the other performances are.
Right. Like he committed enough.
He's not going over the top, but he's having a good time. But they just managed to put about 1,000 bullet holes into the side of a fucking spaceship. Again, they're in space, traveling at extremely high speeds.
They
can't
of guns.
Be good for the ship.
Yes. Yeah. Stop firing guns in space.
It's
they made a whole thing about it in Armageddon, that a guy brought one little pistol And it was such a big deal that if you shoot it, you're going to fuck everything up. But now they're just bringing semi-automatic rifles.
They got all kinds. Each different grunt has an elaborate different gun, and they shoot quite a few bullets. And then, strangely, the movie makes a plot point out of the opposite case later.
Yes.
Jason punches one little hole, and it sucks all the atmosphere out. Causes a total disaster. Maybe the grunts have some kind of self-healing bullets that kind of patch the walls as they enter them. We don't know.
I don't know. They kind of destroy the crap out of a certain humanoid form later on, which we haven't gotten to yet.
They do. The bullets do a good job on flesh, but maybe they also contain a little bit of spackle and they just kind of replace the divots they make.
Oh.
That's very creative. That would be...
They're regenerative bullets. That's what we're saying.
For drywall.
It's like Nobel Peace Prize shit right there, Ian, if you can make that. But I see you did ask a question in the notes of the dumb little jiggle wiggle dance that Jason does every time he gets shot. And you asked if this is a recurring motif. And he honestly doesn't get shot by this many bullets very
often. Oh, that's true. Yeah, I didn't think of that. It's probably not... Bullets aren't probably the main way that people fight back against Jason.
But I do feel like I've seen him do this dance before. So I think it is kind of like a thing. I mean, Kane Hodder played the role for 4 movies. This was his last. So I feel like that's a little flair he brings to the table.
I heard a lot of that praise for Kane Hodder. I was like, oh, that's the best Jason. And I'm like, well, I don't know. His silhouette is good. And his one eyeball that I can see looked ominous when he looked at Adrian. But other than that, his main contribution is the jiggle dance when he gets shot. And he just does.
Yeah, all you can really bring to the role is body language. So.
And I mean, does that make you a better actor than regular acting? If you're only known for your role in which you have no lines and nobody can see your face acting, is that an insult? I don't know.
He's also well known as Leatherface, so maybe you're noticing a trend here.
Yeah, I don't know if you can call that good acting or great acting. Or if you're just being offended at that point.
I think the primary reason Kane Hodder is such a fan favorite is just because of how he interacts with the fans at conventions and autograph signings and stuff. I feel like he's very personable. So he just became a fan favorite that way.
That makes sense. Yeah, you can't actually make an acting career, but if you're one of the lucky few, you can make a Comic-Con career out of it.
Yeah.
And he was a stuntman, I believe, before landing the role. So like he was always working, but not really as an actor. Oh. I know fans are going to be mad at me for this, but I don't really notice much of a difference from one Jason to the next. It's kind of all the same to
me. Pretty subtle.
Yeah. So let's talk about KM-14.
Yes.
The android. How'd you guys find her?
Just the hammiest android I've ever seen.
And she's like an actress. Like I've seen her in other stuff and she's not always like that. So I feel like she was really going for it and just like, fuck it. I cash the check. She enjoyed it.
Like she was like, I'm making this film and I'm going to absolutely have fun every second that I'm doing it. And in a weird way, I have feelings about KM like John has feelings for Taylor Swift Cat.
Oh,
let's go.
I spent this whole movie being like, all right, I would fuck a robot. I didn't know that about myself, but now I do.
But she looks completely human except for the weird nipple things.
If she doesn't need nipples, I don't need nipples. We're fine.
That's good. You'll make it work.
Yeah.
It's very inspiring. But
for the first half, she's doing a Commander Data type of android, right? She's just smart and slightly quippy, maybe.
Yeah.
And then her boyfriend gives her an upgrade, pulls her out.
No. He doesn't give her an upgrade.
Well,
he gives her an upload.
He says, I gave her an upload.
And what he's talking about there is his con, because he fucked her, you see. That's what he means by upload.
Are we certain is that?
Yes. Why would he say upload instead of upgrade after they had sex?
I thought, okay, so this is true. I was literally like, what a weird word to say. But it just struck me as like bad script writing. Like they forgot the word.
It's bad script writing in another sense.
Yeah. And now I'm like, oh, this is a porn. I just skipped through the porn scenes. Like I just don't remember.
Because you guys clearly read it as they just had sex, right? That's not even up for debate. That's what happens in that scene.
No, I did not at all.
I remember there's a scene where they kiss. Is that supposed to then cut away and lead to?
And it cuts away and then they get back in and she's all decked out with the gear and they're like, wow, what happened to you? And he's like, I gave her an upload.
Fucked her. And that turned her into some combination of Trinity and Chris from Blade Runner.
If I'm off base here, I'll be very surprised. I really think I nailed it.
I think you got it.
I think Tsunaran nailed it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Did he build her a robot vagina?
It stands to reason. What else is he doing? Just like sliding in between the back of her knee?
Well, okay, she doesn't need a vagina. Like she could just make like a robot hand and he just does the work on that. You know what I mean? I guess that's not an upload per se, but like how much forethought went into building KM as a sex robot that was also good at science?
Lots
I need to know. Yeah.
Yeah, no, he totally was thinking of that when he built her.
Is that what happens to robots when you do that to them? They become militarized super weapons?
And like very smarmy and just, yeah, like super confident after getting
fucked. Yeah, it's not even that she's more battle ready. She's also like wisecracking now.
Yeah, she's fun. What does that say?
She's like a wine mom when the kids are out of town. She's like, ooh, I'm going to go to Home Goods and have a night to myself. Like she's got that energy, like cool just, mom energy.
I love it.
It is just like, it's a weird hand wave at all these things. It's, yeah, what if a robot becomes a badass? And then they're just like, okay, put her in the patent leather dress and put a few bullets. That tells people bullets means that she's tough.
She's tough now.
And make her flip, because we saw that in Blade Runner. I'm like, oh, the director actually has seen it in an actual sci-fi movie.
Well, the director worked on some really good movies, just not as a director.
Yeah.
You know, so he's been around good movies.
So are we thinking that this is the first time he's had sex with KM?
Yes.
Oh, for sure.
They strongly hint that they hadn't done it before.
He said it's not
I'm concerned that.
He kept denying to everyone that was like his intention, that they were boyfriend and girlfriend. And
it's got some real worrying connotations that this is what director men think happens to a woman after she gets her first upload. Like we all just become like fucking cyborgs that are like really hot and into leather the first time. Worrying.
I remember that happened in Greece. So there's precedent. Yeah, Olivia Newton-John came out.
She was a cyborg?
I mean, we didn't know that until now.
Not at the time, but now that we've seen Jason X, we can explain everything together.
We know. We know now.
Yeah, I don't think this movie's gender politics are fantastic.
No, the optics on this aren't good.
All right. So anything else from this middle part we needed to discuss before we move on to the end?
Oh.
There's some fun stuff at the end.
Let's go.
I feel like we need to get to it.
All right. So while the survivors are preparing to be rescued, Jason's mutilated body parts have come to rest on the lab's nanobot medical station. The nanobots power up and reconstruct Jason into a new and improved cyborg, Uber Jason. Uber Jason attacks and instantly defeats KM-14 by punching her head off, and two others are killed, and the rest flee. They buy time to get on the rescue ship by briefly distracting Jason with a holographic simulation of Camp Crystal Lake and letting him kill some virtual campers. Brodsky sacrifices himself by staying behind to hold off Jason, tackling Jason through space and riding his body down into the atmosphere of Earth 2, where they appear to burn up. Down on Earth 2, a teenage couple sees a shooting star, and something falls into the nearby lake. It's Jason's mask. Spooky.
Very spooky. But he's literally disintegrated, right? So the mask should be the only thing left.
But how was the mask left anyway? The rest of him was made out of the same shit.
But it's for dramatic effect, Nash. Don't overthink it.
God, I mean, those nanobots could have encoded the mask with all of his DNA instructions for replicating him again.
I want to talk about the nanobots really quick.
Yeah.
Mostly because why in the fuck can your computer decide to just regenerate people without any human interaction at all? Why
as would we've you- seen with KM-14, robots are just way too powerful in this timeline.
Why would you let that happen?
Did somebody fuck the nanobot station and that powered
it's got
it up
an upload.
They just stuck their dick into the computer.
Waylander he was missing for a while. He was probably humping the station and gave it some
don't throw character names at me. You know I have no idea who that is.
And I'm also just like, it's fine for the spaceship people to look at Jason's mutilated corpse and be like, oh, he's dead. But I'm sorry, Rowan, where the fuck are you right now? Because you literally watched him survive being a cryogenic corpse that could not sustain life.
But did you see what he was like before the nanobots got to him? He's literally just mush. Just there's pieces, nothing there.
I wouldn't trust it. I'm in space. It's 400 years later. I'm alive. Somehow he's alive. No, you do not let that corpse out of your sight.
He's basically Wolverine at this point.
Yeah.
No matter what you do to him.
You take a little bit with you. So that if it starts to move, you know that the rest of it is regenerating because it has regenerative properties. This is why you don't stress.
That's very reminiscent of the thing.
I know that we just covered last week. Yeah, they should have put a hot wire on it and see if it jumps out.
Yeah, see if it jumps out.
Or at least don't even walk away from it until the other ship is literally at your door and you're ready to go.
Nash, I think you're bringing a little too much logic to this movie and common sense.
Well, I just spent the whole thing being like, what? You have years of learning on, like the rest of them don't. They're idiot kids. They were on a field trip. They've made some bad choices. I get it.
Yeah.
But the doctor literally knew. And she was just like, yeah, you're right. We're done. Everybody's rescued. Let's go. No.
Yeah. Rowan dropped the ball there.
Just
she's kind of missing from a lot. Even though
I was
she's
just going to say,
hero,
I don't recall
kinda,
her.
She disappears for a while and then comes back at the
she
end.
She doesn't really move the plot forward. Like she's not the propulsive force of the movie. I guess you can argue after a certain point point, the killer is the protagonist in any slasher movie. Once you're past like the fourth one, right, yeah, why are people showing up?
Yeah.
To see the killer. Like, Jason is the hero of this movie, I think.
But she doesn't even need to come back to life to do anything. Like, they could have brought her on board. She's dead. It doesn't matter. Like, she has no participation. She gives them no information.
She gives them a little information.
She warns them once.
She's the exposition of the movie. That's all she's there for, is to be like, no, he's bad.
You shouldn't have brought him.
But they don't listen to her anyway. So.
Yeah, they didn't give her a skill or anything that like comes back in the end.
And to the scalper guy's credit, like, the Dr. Lowe calls his friend and is like, how much could I sell this body for? And that guy also knows about Jason Voorhees. So you don't even need Rowan to provide that information, because the other dude does it for her. She did not need to come here. They were just like, what if we added another hot girl? But she's not hot when she's a scientist. She's just wearing a gross suit. She comes on space and now she's space hot.
Somebody gives her one of their space cable knit sweaters and they're like, ooh.
Yeah.
There, like, that the scene
where
fit.
The girl takes her glasses and her ponytail out. Yeah. I'm like, oh my.
That suit fits you too well. You need to wear something that doesn't fit you at all.
There's nothing she does in this movie that like a Google search of like big machete, hockey mask.
Yeah. Should we
like,
run?
Wouldn't have solved. Yeah. Like, they had Wikipedia, I'm sure, in the future.
I mean, they clearly have the internet if they can regenerate dead tissue.
Maybe this is what society would be like without the internet. Look how advanced it is when we don't have the internet.
I mean, I guess you can upload your DNA into a robot and that makes it cooler. So do they really even need the internet?
I like that we're just using the term upload now to mean cream pies, because it's so much classier.
It really is. It really is. Upload me, daddy.
Oh, no. Speaking of just like inappropriate sexual content, let's talk about the campers.
Yeah.
This scene, I actually think, is pretty funny.
I love
and like
it.
A fun commentary on the series.
Yeah.
Because Jason, to distract him, they fabricate this virtual reality environment that mimics Camp Crystal Lake as how it looked, you know, in the 80s and 90s. And they have these two teens taking their shirts off and pillow fighting and kissing and saying things like, we love premarital sex. The movie is now just leaning hard into the idea that slashers and slasher movies just hate premarital sex, and that's right, like their driving motivation. But the jump cut to Jason hitting one sleeping bag with another is just very fun. Like, it's almost slapstick comedy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it feels so heightened. Not that this movie's reality isn't already heightened, but he's just literally whacking a sleeping bag with a girl in it onto another, and the girls are like giggling the whole time.
Are they giggling while they're dying?
I think they were. Like, they didn't sound like screams of anguish.
People, so.
They're not feeling pain. But yeah, it is a callback to another kill from part 7 where he slams a sleeping bag into a tree, killing a person.
Okay, yeah, that was into a tree, not two people into each other.
Right.
He does it at the end, even in this one. He takes one of the sleeping bags and slams it into a tree. But apparently that was ad-libbed by Kane Hodder because he was getting annoyed at how many times they had to do a scene. So he just took the prop sleeping bag that was supposed to have the camper in it and slammed it into a tree. And they liked it so much they kept it.
I mean, yeah, I guess it would be frustrating to shoot some of these scenes over and over again, knowing that you're in space. I don't know. Like, I just, you're a slasher
Knowing what movie you're in. Yeah, like, it's not, how much better could it get?
Oh, I'm sorry. He got annoyed during part 7 when they were filming. And that's like where the iconic sleep
originated. Oh, so that was him. So he's using the same sleeping bag skills that he developed.
That he developed.
That was his first movie as Jason. And this was his last. So it's a nice little bookend.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's nice.
He seems like a nice guy. I hope he's doing okay.
I hope so.
And then the movie just kind of ends. Yeah, it feels a little anticlimactic to have this be the way he dies, just kind of vaporized by the atmosphere. But I mean, I guess this is as good as any, right? Like, it's got to be something that feels final.
I would like to argue that Rowan should have been the one that rode him into the atmosphere and died with him.
Oh, that would have been killer.
Sacrifice herself, yeah.
I think that would have been some really nice symmetry to how she went out the first time 400 years ago. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that they're tied together in this fate.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, they can't burn a woman alive, I guess. They could do a lot of other questionable things to women in this film, but not that.
Froze a woman's head and shattered it on a wall.
They could have burned her. Come on.
They could. Especially if she made the choice to do it. Then it's like you're giving her some agency.
Yeah, that would have been so much drama. I mean, I'm getting chills just thinking of that.
It would have been incredible. Especially when you have the teens standing and being like, oh, a shooting star. And it's like, no, that's a woman that died 400 years ago.
Oh. And she came back and lived another 8 hours and died again.
But she like lives randomly. And now it's just kind of like everyone you've ever known is dead except for these teenagers that you have to live with now on Earth.
Yeah, too. She didn't have anything going for her anyway. She could have.
What are you going to do for like a job? You're not qualified for anything. You don't know how anything works anymore.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. It should have been her. She should have ridden his corpse, fucking uploaded her data, and just died in the atmosphere.
What do you mean uploaded her data?
Just fucked him right into the Earth's crust.
Are you saying she should have pegged Jason?
Yes, I'm absolutely saying that. Taking his nice little sweaty meat stick, no wait, his machete thing, and just gone to town. Sorry.
October Nash is a whole other thing. It's real spooky.
It is real spooky.
To your point about the death, like Jason dies almost off screen, right? He's in the far distance going down into the atmosphere. But that's just because they didn't bother to do a special effects shot. Like, you could have actually made that a little more personal if you would have stayed with the two of them longer and seen them melting away. Did they almost show that for a minute? I feel like the whole scene happens.
Yeah, you see them start like falling apart and vaporizing in the atmosphere for a hot second. But
maybe that just didn't make an impression on me. But yeah, I feel like his death happens 18 miles away in the far distance.
It really does.
As a little glowing speck. Oh. Kind of takes some of the oomph out of it.
Yeah, and like as much as we love Peter Mensa, like we mentioned, his character has no ties to Jason except having been on the ship when he woke up. So there's not a lot of emotional investment there.
Yeah, and he was already dead. Like we already had counted him out and we're like, okay, who's going to have these people? And he just like kept walking after getting stabbed a bunch of times. Like, you didn't need to be the hero of this movie, dude. You could have just died with some dignity in the dark room where we keep all of our sharp objects. You did not have to commit to the bit this hard.
Keeping in line with how blood works in this movie, though, he gets stabbed through the side several times.
Yeah.
And he has one little wet nap's worth of blood on his side. That's how you're supposed to know he's dying.
Yeah.
He's bleeding just the smallest amount. But yeah, he walks around bleeding like that for 25 minutes before he finally jumps on Jason's back and rides him.
I mean, he must have picked up one of those little Band-Aid patch is one of those magic things that they put on the guy's arm that probably staunched the bleeding a little bit. I don't know. I'm hypothesizing here.
Maybe blood coagulates different in space. Let's just go with
Or in the future in general. Like blood is maybe not the blood we think of today.
But
future blood.
The dude on the spike did bleed quite a bit out of his face.
That's true.
So,
We
don't know.
Earlier in the shoot when they had more budget.
Maybe like you could pay for a blood upgrade in 400 years in the future where you're like, I bleed less when I get cut. And they're like, all right, that's $5 million or whatever. They'll just go with that. I don't know how much money is.
Yeah. Go receive your upload. And
you can't keep saying that word, Nash. It means something else now. We've changed. We fundamentally changed the meaning of the
word. That's how I mean it. In the future, maybe all.
The fancy blood.
Yeah. All uploads happen that way.
Oh, no. You have to get your blood uploaded. I'm not sure if I'm down for this anymore.
Welcome to the future, baby.
So that was the movie. Let's talk a little bit about the aftermath of the movie. They finally got Freddy vs. Jason done in 2003. So I guess this really didn't need to happen at all because they made this because they were like, well, it could be another 10 years before Freddy vs. Jason happens.
It's just a placeholder.
That happened the next year. Yeah. So that's kind of funny to me that this movie really came out of nowhere and achieved nothing. And
really extravagant, though, for a placeholder movie. Like, oh, let's just keep the franchise warm. Let's call some special effects guys and start designing spaceships and space stations instead of like, let's call the garden crew and get some pine trees out.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was rumors that this was, I got this from IMDb trivia, so you can always trust that to be 100% accurate. But this was like a script contest. They were like, hey, send us a script for a Friday the 13th movie and maybe we'll make it. And Todd Farmer, who has a role as one of the grunts in this movie, sent in the script and they were like, yeah, okay, we'll make that. So that makes a lot of sense, actually. That would be like a fanfic thing almost. It feels that way, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah, it does. It really does. Little worried about that kid, though, honestly.
He was a grown ass man. He was not a kid.
Oh, that's
he's got beard and everything in this movie.
Makes it worse, Todd.
He's the buddy of the kid. He's the bald, tall guy with the goatee who gets his head banged against the wall after the annoying kid gets offed in the virtual.
That's right. He's not a grunt. And he plays Dallas, which he named the character Dallas as an homage to Alien. Because why would you not want to remind people of a much better version of essentially the same story while you're making it?
Yeah, that was his proof that he had seen it. I've seen another movie, you guys. I put it in my movie.
I know what movies are. You can't prove I don't.
Oh, Todd.
Jim Isaac. This was only the second movie he directed. We mentioned he worked with David Cronenberg on his special effects on a string of movies. He also did special effects for Return of the Jedi, Arachnophobia, Gremlins. Like, these are movies pretty highly regarded for their creatures and creature effects. So he was definitely a star in that world. When he moved into directing, this was only his second movie. He directed The Horror Show in 1989, which I never even heard of. And then he made Skinwalkers, which I do remember. That came out, I think, in 2006. And some people liked that movie, but it got critically ravaged and made no money. And then he made Pig Hunt in 2008, which I'd never even heard of. But in researching for this movie, it's kind of a cult classic. Like, people really dig this Pig Hunt movie. I don't even know what it's about.
Oh, we watched Pigs? The wrong movie? Is that what you're saying? We should have
Pig Hunt. Pig Hunt might have to go on the list. I don't know.
Well, I'm free tomorrow.
It's probably as long as it will take. It's one of those. But then sadly, Jim Isaac died in 2012 due to blood cancer. Oh. So he is no longer with us.
Well, now I feel bad for shitting on him.
Yeah.
No, he was a filmmaker. We're just judging his films. We're not judging him as a person.
That's true.
Like we said, he was very well known in the movie industry for one thing he did very well, which was make creature effects.
Yeah. Kudos to him.
So it's not like he didn't have great success in certain things in his life.
Sure.
Okay. And so this movie, interestingly, and the previous movie, which was 1993's Jason Goes to Hell, The Final Friday, if you'll notice, no Friday the 13th used in either of those titles because they lost the rights somehow. Paramount Pictures owns the series, but not the character of Jason. So they could still use the character of Jason, but not the name Friday the 13th. And this has all still been up in the air ever since. There's an ongoing legal battle as of this recording, as far as who owns the rights to make Jason movies and Friday the 13th movies, that is still unresolved.
Wow.
So that's why we haven't gotten one since that remake. And was it 2013? Think. But yeah, there's a whole big thing going on with those rights. So who knows? We may never get another Friday the 13th movie and Ian will be heartbroken.
I am already. Can you tell?
This actually became a favorite amongst some of the fans. Like, this has become one of those movies that people enjoy after its failure at the box office. It supposedly made triple the production cost on DVD sales once it came out on DVD. It became a movie people would gather around with their friends and watch, like I did. So do you think it works on that level?
You're high
enough. Like a Mystery Science Theater 3000 type movie to just make fun of for 90 minutes with your friends? I think it does.
Yeah.
Ian? I was not prepared to watch it on those terms, but yeah, I do think on those terms it would have worked better than what I saw.
I think if you went to the theater to see this film, like you spent the $20 to see it and the $40 on popcorn, I probably would have been like, wow, I'm furious. But it really is. It is nice. And I think it's nice that it's dated now, like the graphics are also horrible.
Yes, that gives it a weird kind of pseudo charm.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
So, Nash, final thoughts on the movie. What would you say about this film to sum up your feelings about it? Do you think it deserved to fail?
I do wish they had leaned in to the porn part or removed it. I felt like I was on the edge of just waiting for it to be something that it wasn't. But if they had taken the end scene where it's funny and built that into the rest of it, they tried to do too many things at once. They were like, we need to lure people in with tits and then end where we're all laughing at like half of the characters died horribly, but while they were making jokes about dying horribly, like we have that girl with her hands on the grate and she's like, well, this sucks. And then she gets yeeted out of the whole space station. Just commit to the bit, because there were brilliant moments in this film. And that's really true, where it was just like, wow, it's incredible. But it wasn't consistent. So honestly, I loved hating this movie and I hated loving it, but I would watch it again.
Wow.
All right. Well said.
Surprise. Twist.
Ian, hit me with it. I know you've got an eloquent final thought for us.
So I started a rewatch with this movie. And usually when I do, I feel myself settling into the movie's level, getting the rhythm of the movie, meeting it on its terms, forgiving its flaws. That started to happen as I started my rewatch. And I was like, no. And I must not let this happen. Not today, Jason. I resisted warming up to this movie and I basically stopped my rewatch and then only spot checked a few scenes that I wanted to refresh myself on, because I don't want to be warmed up to this movie. I saw it once. I believe it was not good. I have good reasons for that. I don't need to be convinced otherwise. And so, yeah, I'm the Mr. Negative on this episode. I often find a lot of forgiveness for weak movies, but this was just the filmmaking was so bad. I think that was the thing. It could have been a dumb movie. It could have been a corny movie, but it was bad. The acting was bad. The directing, the editing, the choices deflated the only fun stuff that could have been there. All the suspense, all the kills were undermined by just bad choices and clumsy filmmaking. So that's in the end why I didn't want to forgive it and I didn't want to let it get its hooks in me.
I think a lot of things can be true simultaneously, which is that this is a failure of filmmaking, but also it's still kind of fun. And that's kind of where I land on it. I guess I'm able to enjoy it on a certain level with shutting my brain off and lowering my standards for a little bit. If I looked at it more critically, I probably would agree with you, Ian. But maybe I've also watched probably a lot more slasher movies than you have in my life. And I think I already have that feeling where I can settle into a movie's level without having to watch it twice, just because I'm so familiar with the beats of the story they go through. So maybe that's where my leniency on this movie comes from.
Yeah, I think the genre wouldn't exist. I mean, this whole franchise exists because people accepted the idea, oh, a corny movie, it's got a little sex, it's got some violence, and it's kind of dumb, but we love it.
Yeah. So that was Jason X. Nash, thanks so much for joining us. Do me a favor, plug your stuff.
Oh, sure. You can catch me anywhere on the internet at It's Nash Flynn, but you should listen to my podcast anywhere, literally anywhere, except for OnlyFans. They didn't let me make one of those for good reason. Yeah, it's a bummer, but it's fine. We all expected it. You could also listen to my podcast, Death and Friends. It's called Death and Friends. It's with my fantastic co-host, Angel Luna. It is everywhere you listen to podcasts. Death and Friends, also Death Podcast on Twitter.com.
Go do that.
Yeah, follow the Twitter, listen to the podcast. It's great. I'm a big fan. Also, Angel was a guest on our Spinal Tap episode, so go back and listen to that if you enjoyed Death.
Love
Angel.
Love Nash. It's great to have you here, Nash. You're our first two-timer on the show.
Yeah.
It's
really
fun and exciting for us to have you back.
I believe I was your first guest, and now I'm your first repeat guest.
And our last.
Slasher films.
Thanks so much for listening, guys. Tune in next week. Blasttober is still going on. We're going to have another excellent scary movie for you. I'll spoil it because I'm going to tweet it out anyway. It's Event Horizon. Ooh. So watch it. Get ready. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please give us a rating, a review. And wherever you're listening, please subscribe to the pod. You can follow us on Twitter at BlastZonePod. Email us BlastZonePod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. So keep tuning in.
Love to hear from you. We'll see you next time. All right. In the Blast Zone.
The Blast Zone.
The Blast Zone.
This is a tale.